the magic around him. With a low growl that might have been a mocking laugh, Guinevere loped across the stone to the figurine and dissipated into smoky nothingness. The cat walked down the length of the planar tunnel, toward its home in the astral plane. Ever before had Guinevere been anxious to make this journey, to escape the foul commands of its drow masters. This time, though, the cat hesitated with every stride, looking back over its shoulder to the dot of darkness that was Menzo Berenzon. "Will you deal?" Drizzt offered. "You are in no position to bargain," Alton laughed, drawing out the slender wand that Matron Sinefe had given him. Massage cut him short. "Wait," he said. "Perhaps Drizzt will prove valuable to our struggle against House Dowerden." He eyed the young warrior directly. "You will betray your family?" "Hardly," Drizzt snickered. "As I have already said to you, I care little for the coming conflict. Let House Hunnett and House Dowerden both be damned, as surely they will. My concerns are personal." "You must have something to offer us in exchange for your gain," Massage explained. "Otherwise, what bargain can you hope to make?" "I do have something to give you in return," Drizzt replied, his voice calm. "Your lives." Massage and Alton looked to each other and laughed aloud, but there was a trace of nervousness in their chuckles. "Give me the figurine, Massage," Drizzt continued, undaunted. "Guinevere never belonged to you and will serve you no more." Massage stopped laughing. "In return," Drizzt went on before the wizard could reply, "I will leave House Dowerden and not take part in the battle." "Corpses do not fight," Alton sneered. "I will take another Dowerden with me," Drizzt spat at him. "A weapons master. Surely House Hunnett will have gained an advantage of both Drizzt and Zacnaphane." "Silence!" Massage screamed. "The cat is mine. I do not need any bargains from a pitiful Dowerden. You are dead, fool, and House Dowerden's weapons master will follow you to your grave." "Guinevere is free," Drizzt growled. The scimitars came out in Drizzt's hands. He never had really fought a wizard before, let alone two, but he remembered vividly from past encounters the sting of their spells. Massage had already begun to cast, but of more concern was Alton, out of quick reach and pointing that slender wand. Before Drizzt ever decided his course of action, the issue was settled for him. A cloud of smoke engulfed Massage and he fell back, his spell disrupted with the shock. Guinevere was back. Alton was out of Drizzt's reach. Drizzt could not hope to get to the wizard before the wand went off, but to Guinevere's streamlined feline muscles, the distance was not so great. Hind legs tamped a footing and snapped, launching the hunting panther through the air. Alton brought the wand to bear on this new nemesis in time and released a mighty bolt, scorching Guinevere's chest. Greater strength than a single bolt, though, would be needed to deter the ferocious panther. Stunned but still fighting, Guinevere slammed into the faceless wizard, dropping him off the backside of the stalagmite mound. The lightning bolt's flash stunned Drizzt as well, but he continued to pursue Massage and could only hope that Guinevere had survived. He rushed around the base of the other stalagmite mound and came face to face with Massage, once again in the act of spellcasting. Drizzt didn't slow. He ducked his head and barreled into his opponent, his scimitars leading the way. He slipped right through his opponent, right through the image of his opponent. Drizzt crashed heavily into the stone and rolled aside, trying to escape the magical attack he knew was coming. This time, Massage, standing fully 30 feet behind the projection of his image, was taking no chances with a miss. He launched a volley of magical missiles of energy that veered unerringly to intercept the dodging fighter. They slammed into Drizzt, jolting him, bruising him under his skin. But Drizzt was able to shake away the numbing pain and regain his footing. He knew where the real Massage was standing now and had no intention of letting the trickster out of sight again. A dagger in his hand, Massage watched Drizzt's stalking approach. Drizzt didn't understand. Why wasn't the wizard preparing another spell? The fall had reopened the wound in Drizzt's shoulder, and the magical bolts had torn his side in one leg. The wounds were not serious, though, and Massage had no chance against him in physical combat. The wizard stood before him, unconcerned, dagger drawn and a wicked smile on his face. Face down on the hard stone, Alton felt the warmth of his own blood running freely between the melted holes that were his eyes. The cat was higher up the side of the mound, not yet fully recovered from the lightning bolt. Alton forced himself up and raised his wand for a second strike, but the wand had snapped in half. Frantically, Alton recovered the other piece and held it up before his melted, disbelieving eyes. Guinevere was coming again, but Alton didn't notice. The glowing ends of the wand, a power building within the magical stick, enthralled him. "You cannot do that," Alton whispered in protest. Guinevere leaped just as the broken wand exploded. A ball of fire roared up into Menzo Berenzon's night. Chunks of rubble rocketed off the great cavern's eastern wall and ceiling, and both Drizzt and Massage were knocked from their feet. "Now Guinevere belongs to no one," Massage sneered, tossing the figurine to the ground. "No Devere remains to claim vengeance on House de Werden," Drizzt growled back, his anger holding off his despair. Massage became the focus of that anger, and the wizard's mocking laughter led Drizzt toward him in a furious rush. Just as Drizzt got in range, Massage snapped his fingers and was gone. "Invisible!" Drizzt roared, slicing futilely at the empty air before him. His exertions took the edge from his blind rage, and he realized that Massage was no longer in front of him. How foolish he must seem to the wizard, how vulnerable! Drizzt crouched to listen. He sensed a distant chanting from up above, on the cavern wall. Drizzt's instincts told him to dive to the side, but his new understanding of wizards told him that Massage would anticipate such a move. Drizzt feigned to the left and heard the climactic words of the building spell. As the lightning blast thundered harmlessly to the side, Drizzt sprinted straight ahead, hoping his vision would return in time for him to get to the wizard. "Damn you!" Massage cried, understanding the feint as soon as he had errantly fired. Rage became terror in the next instant, as Massage caught sight of Drizzt, sprinting across the stone, leaping the rubble, and crossing the sides of the mounds with all the grace of a hunting cat. Massage fumbled in his pockets for the components to his next spell. He had to be quick. He was fully 20 feet from the cavern floor, perched on a narrow ledge, but Drizzt was moving fast, impossibly fast. The ground beneath him did not register in Drizzt's conscious thoughts. The cavern wall would have seemed unclimbable to him in a more rational state, but now he gave it not a care. Guinevere was lost to him. Guinevere was gone. That wicked wizard on the ledge, that embodiment of demonic evil, had caused it. Drizzt sprang to the wall, found one hand free. He must have discarded one scimitar, and caught a tenuous hold. It wasn't enough for a rational drow, but Drizzt's mind ignored the protests of the muscles in his straining fingers. He had only 10 feet to go. Another volley of energy bolts thudded into Drizzt, hammering the top of his head in rapid succession. "How many spells remain, wizard?" he heard himself defiantly cry as he ignored the pain. Massage fell back when Drizzt looked up at him, when the burning light of those lavender orbs fell upon him like a pronouncement of doom. He had seen Drizzt in battle many times, and the sight of the fighting young warrior had haunted him through all the planning of this assassination. But Massage had never seen Drizzt enraged before. If he had, he never would have agreed to try to kill Drizzt. If he had, he would have told Matron Cinefay to go sit on a stalagmite. What spell was next? What spell could slow the monster that was Drizzt O'Erton? A hand, glowing with the heat of anger, grabbed the lip of the ledge. Massage stomped on it with the heel of his boot. The fingers were broken. The wizard knew that the fingers were broken, but Drizzt, impossibly, was up beside him, and the blade of a scimitar was through the wizard's ribs. "The fingers are broken!" the dying mage gasped in protest. Drizzt looked down at his hand and realized the pain for the first time. "Perhaps," he said absently. "But they will heal." Drizzt, limping, found his other scimitar, and cautiously picked his way over the rubble of one of the mounds. Fighting the fear within his broken heart, he forced himself to peer over the crest at the destruction. The backside of the mound glowed eerily in the residual heat, a beacon for the awakening city. So much for stealth. Pieces of Alton Devere lay scattered at the bottom, around the wizard's smoldering robes. "Have you found peace, faceless one?" Drizzt whispered, exhaling the last of his anger. He remembered the assault Alton had launched against him those years ago in the academy. The faceless master and Massage had explained it away as a test for a budding warrior. "How long you have carried your hate," Drizzt muttered at the blasted bits of corpse. But Alton Devere was not his concern now. He scanned the rest of the rubble, looking for some clue to Guinevere's fate, not certain how a magical creature would fare in such a disaster. Not a sign of the cat remained, nothing that would even hint that Guinevere had ever been there. Drizzt consciously reminded himself that there was no hope, but the anxious spring in his steps mocked his stern visage. He rushed back down the mound and around the other stalagmite, where Massage and he had been when the wand exploded. He spotted the onyx figurine immediately. He lifted it gently in his hands. It was warm, as though it too had been caught in the blast, and Drizzt could sense that its magic had diminished. Drizzt wanted to call the cat then, but he didn't dare, knowing that the travel between the plains heavily taxed Guinevere. If the cat had been injured, Drizzt figured that it would be better to give it some time to recuperate. "Oh, Guinevere," he moaned, "my friend, my brave friend." He dropped the figurine into his pocket. He could only hope that Guinevere had survived. 29. Alone. Drizzt walked back around the stalagmite, back to the body of Massage Hunnette. He had had no choice but to kill his adversary. Massage had drawn the battle lines. That fact did little to dispel the guilt in Drizzt as he looked upon the corpse. He had killed another drow, had taken the life of one of his own people. Was he trapped, as Zacnaphane had been trapped for so very many years, in a cycle of violence that would know no end? "Never again," Drizzt vowed to the corpse. "Never again will I kill a drow elf." He turned away disgusted, and knew as soon as he looked back to the silent, sinister mounds of the vast drow city that he would not survive long in Menzo Baranzon if he held to that promise. A thousand possibilities whirled in Drizzt's mind as he made his way through the winding ways of Menzo Baranzon. He pushed the thoughts aside, stopped them from dulling his alertness. The light was general now in Narbondale. The drow day was beginning, and activity had started from every corner of the city. In the world of the surface dwellers, the day was the safer time when light exposed assassins. In Menzo Baranzon's eternal darkness, the daytime of the Dark Elves was even more dangerous than the night. Drizzt picked his way carefully, rolling wide from the mushroom fence of the noblest houses, wherein lay House Hunnette. He encountered no more adversaries and made the safety of the Doerden compound a short time later. He rushed through the gate and by the surprised soldiers, without a word of explanation, and shoved aside the guards below the balcony. The house was strangely quiet. Drizzt would have expected them all to be up and about with battle imminent. He gave the eerie stillness no more thought, and he cut a straight line to the training gym and Zacnaphane's private quarters. Drizzt paused outside the gym's stone door, his hand tightly clenched on the handle of a portal. What would he propose to his father? That they leave? He and Zacnaphane on the perilous trails of the Underdark, fighting when they must and escaping the burdensome guilt of their existence under drow rule? Drizzt liked the thought, but he wasn't so certain now, standing before the door, that he could convince Zac to follow such a course. Zac could have left before, at any time during the centuries of his life, but when Drizzt had asked him why he had remained, the heat had drained from the weapons master's face. Were they indeed trapped in the life offered to them by Matron Malice and her evil cohorts? Drizzt grimaced away the worries. No sense in arguing to himself with Zac only a few steps away. The training gym was as quiet as the rest of the house. Too quiet. Drizzt hadn't expected Zac to be there, but something more than his father was absent. The father's presence, too, was gone. Drizzt knew that something was wrong, and each step he took toward Zack's private door quickened until he was in full flight. He burst in without a knock, not surprised to find the bed empty. "Malice must have sent him out in search of me," Drizzt reasoned. "Damn, I have caused him trouble." He turned to leave, but something caught his eye and held him in the room. Zack's sword belt. Never would the weapons master have left his room, not even for functions within the safety of House Doerden, without his swords. "Your weapon is your most trusted companion," Zac had told Drizzt 1,000 times. "Keep it ever at your side." "House Hunnette," Drizzt whispered, wondering if the rival house had magically attacked in the night while he was out battling Alton and Massage. The compound, though, was serene. Surely the soldiers would have known if anything like that had occurred. Drizzt picked up the belt for inspection. No blood, and the clasp neatly unbuckled. No enemy had torn this from Zack. The weapons master's pouch lay beside it, also intact. "What then?" Drizzt asked aloud. He replaced the sword belt beside the bed, but slung the pouch across his neck, and turned, not knowing where he should go next. He had to see about the rest of the family, he realized, before he had even stepped through the door. Perhaps then this riddle about Zack would become more clear. Dread grew out of that thought as Drizzt headed down the long and decorated corridor to the chapel anteroom. Had Malice, or any of them, brought Zack harm? For what purpose? The notion seemed illogical to Drizzt, but it nagged him every step, as if some sixth sense were warning him. There still was no sign of anyone. The anteroom's ornate doors swung in, magically and silently, even as Drizzt raised his hand to knock on them. He saw the matron mother first, sitting smugly on her throne at the rear of the room, her smile inviting. Drizzt's discomfort did not diminish when he entered. The whole family was there. Breeza, Vierna, and Maya to the sides of their matron, Risen and Dinan unobtrusively standing beside the left wall. The whole family, except for Zack. Matron Malice studied her son carefully, noting his many wounds.
"I instructed you not to leave the house," she said to Drizzt, but she was not scolding him. "Where did your travels take you?"
"Where is Zacnaphane?" Drizzt asked in reply.
"Answer the matron mother," Breeza
yelled at him, her snake whip prominently displayed on her belt. Drizzt glared at her, and she recoiled, feeling the same bitter chill that Zacnaphane had cast over her earlier in the night.
"I instructed you not to leave the house," Malice said again, still holding calm. "Why did you disobey me?"
"I had matters to attend," Drizzt replied, "urgent matters. I did not wish to bother you with them."
"War is upon us, my son," Matron Malice explained. "You are vulnerable out in the city by yourself. House de Werden cannot afford to lose you now."
"My business had to be handled alone," Drizzt answered.
"Is it completed?"
"It is."
"Then I trust you will not disobey me again."
The words came calm and even, but Drizzt understood at once the severity of the threat behind them.
"To other matters, then," Malice went on.
"Where is Zacnaphane?" Drizzt dared to ask again. Breeza mumbled some curse under her breath and pulled the whip from her belt. Matron Malice threw an outstretched hand in her direction to stay her. They needed tact, not brutality, to bring Drizzt under control at this critical time. There would be ample opportunities for punishment after House Hunnett was properly defeated.
"Concern yourself not with the fate of the weapons master," Malice replied. "He works for the good of House de Werden, even as we speak, on a personal mission."
Drizzt didn't believe a word of it. Zack would never have left without his weapons. The truth hovered about Drizzt's thoughts, but he wouldn't let it in.
"Our concern is House Hunnett," Malice went on, addressing them all. "The war's first strikes may fall this day."
"The first strikes already have fallen," Drizzt interrupted. All eyes came back to him, to his wounds. He wanted to continue the discussion about Zack, but knew that he would only get himself and Zack, if Zack was still alive, into further trouble. Perhaps the conversation would bring him more clues.
"You have seen battle?" Malice asked.
"You know of the Faceless One?" Drizzt asked.
"Master of the Academy," Dinan answered. "Of Sorcerer. We have dealt with him often."
"He has been of use to us in the past," said Malice. "But no more, I believe. He is a Hunnett. Gelrose Hunnett."
"No," Drizzt replied. "Once he may have been, but Alton de Vere is his name. Was his name."
"The Link,"
Dinan growled, suddenly comprehending.
"Gelrose was to kill Alton on the night of House de Vere's fall."
"It would seem that Alton de Vere proved the stronger," mused Malice, and all became clear to her. "Matron Cinefe Hunnett accepted him, used him to her gain," she explained to her family.
She looked back to Drizzt.
"You battled with him?"
He is dead, Drizzt answered. Matron Malice cackled with delight.
One less wizard to deal with, Breeza remarked, replacing the whip on her belt.
Two, Drizzt corrected. But there was no boasting in his voice. He was not proud of his actions.
Massage Hunnet is no more. My son, Matron Malice cried. You have brought us a great edge in this war.
She glanced all about her family, infecting them except Drizzt with her elation.
House Hunnet may not even choose to strike us now, knowing its disadvantage. We will not let them get away. We will destroy them this day and become the eighth house of Menzo Berenzon. Woe to the enemies of Daemon and Ashesbernon! We must move at once, my family,
Malice reasoned, her hands rubbing over each other in excitement.
We cannot wait for an attack. We must take the offensive. Alton de Vere is gone now. The link that justifies this war is no more. Surely the ruling council knew of Hunnet's intentions, and with both her wizards dead and the element of surprise lost, Matron Cinefe will move quickly to stop the battle.
Drizzt's hand unconsciously slipped into Zack's pouch as the others joined Malice in her plotting.
Where is Zack?
Drizzt demanded again above the chorus. Silence dropped as quickly as the tumult had begun.
He is of no concern to you, my son,
Malice said to him, still keeping to her tact despite Drizzt's impudence.
You are the weapons master of House de Werden now. Loth has forgiven your insolence. You have no crimes weighing against you. Your career may begin anew to glorious heights.
Her words cut through Drizzt as surely as his own scimitar might. You killed him, he whispered aloud, the truth too awful to be contained in silent thought. The matron's face suddenly gleamed, hot with rage.
You killed him, she shot back at Drizzt. Your insolence demanded repayment to the Spider Queen.
Drizzt's tongue got all tangled up behind his teeth.
But you live,
Malice went on, relaxing again in her chair.
As the elven child lives.
Deenan was not the only one in the room to gasp audibly.
Yes, we know of your deception, Malice sneered. The Spider Queen always knew. She demanded restitution.
You sacrificed Zacnophane, Drizzt breathed, hardly able to get the words out of his mouth. You gave him to that damned Spider Queen?
I would watch how I spoke of Queen Loth,
Malice warned.
Forget Zacnophane, he is not your concern. Look to your own life, my warrior son. All glories are offered to you, a station of honor.
Drizzt was indeed looking to his own life at that moment, at the proposed path that offered him a life of battle, a life of killing drow.
You have no options,
Malice said to him, seeing his inward struggle.
I offer to you now your life. In exchange, you must do as I bid, as Zacnophane once did.
You kept your bargain with him, Drizzt spat sarcastically.
I did,
Matron Malice protested.
Zacnophane went willingly to the altar for your sake.
Her words stung Drizzt for only a moment. He would not accept the guilt for Zacnophane's death. He had followed the only course he could, on the surface against the elves and here in the evil city.
My offer is a good one, Malice said. I give it here before all the family. Both of us will benefit from the agreement, weapons master.
A smile spread across Drizzt's face when he looked into Matron Malice's cold eyes, a grin that Malice took as acceptance. Weapons master? Drizzt echoed. Not likely. Again Malice misunderstood.
I have seen you in battle, she argued. Two wizards! You underestimate yourself!
Drizzt nearly laughed aloud at the irony of her words. She thought he would fail where Zacnophane had failed, would fall into her trap as the former weapons master had fallen, never to climb back out. It is you who underestimate me, Malice, Drizzt said with threatening calm.
Matron!
Breeza demanded, but she held back, seeing that Drizzt and everyone else was ignoring her as the drama played out. You ask me to serve your evil designs, Drizzt continued. He knew, but didn't care, that all of them were nervously fingering weapons or preparing spells, were waiting for the proper moment to strike the blasphemous fool dead. Those childhood memories of the agony of snake whips reminded him of the punishment for his actions. Drizzt's fingers closed around a circular object, adding to his courage, though he would have continued in any case. They are a lie, as your people are a lie.
Your skin is as dark as mine, Malice reminded him. You are a drow, though you have never learned what that means.
Oh, I do know what it means.
Then act by the rules,
Matron Malice demanded.
Your rules? Drizzt growled back. But your rules are a damned lie as well, as great a lie as that filthy spider you claim as a deity.
Insolent slug, Breeza cried, raising her snake whip.
Drizzt struck first. He pulled the object, the tiny ceramic globe, from Zacnaphane's pouch.
A true god, damn you all, he cried as he slammed the ball to the stone floor. He snapped his eyes shut as the pebble within the ball, enchanted by a powerful light emanating Dwyamer, exploded into the room and erupted into his kin's sensitive eyes. And damn that spider queen as well!
Malice reeled backward, taking her great throne right over in a heavy crash to the hard stone. Cries of agony and rage came from every corner of the room as the sudden light bored into the stunned drow. Finally, Vierna managed to launch a countering spell and return the room to its customary gloom.
Get him!
Malice growled, still trying to shake off the heavy fall.
I want him dead!
The others had hardly recovered enough to heed her commands, and Drizzt was already out of the house. Carried on the silent winds of the astral plane, the call came. The entity of the panther stood up, ignoring its pains, and took note of the voice, a familiar, comforting voice. The cat was off then, running with all its heart and strength to answer the summons of its new master. A short while later, Drizzt crept out of a little tunnel, Guinevere at his side, and moved through the courtyard of the academy to look down upon Menzo Berenzon for the last time. What place is this, Drizzt asked the cat quietly, that I call home? These are my people, by skin and by heritage, but I am no kin to them. They are lost and ever will be. How many others are like me, I wonder, Drizzt whispered, taking one final look. Doomed souls, as was Zacnaphane. Poor Zac. I do this for him, Guinevere. I leave as he could not. His life has been my lesson. A dark scroll etched by the heavy price exacted by Matron Malice's evil promises.
Goodbye, Zac,
he cried, his voice rising in final defiance.
My father, take heart, as do I, that when we meet again, in a life after this, it will surely not be in the hellfire our kin are doomed to endure.
Drizzt motioned the cat back into the tunnel, the entrance to the untamed Underdark. Watching the cat's easy movements, Drizzt realized again how fortunate he was to have found a companion of like spirit, a true friend. The way would not be easy for him and Guinevere beyond the guarded borders of Menzo Berenzon. They would be unprotected and alone, though better off by Drizzt's estimation, more than they ever could be amid the evilness of the drow. Drizzt stepped into the tunnel behind Guinevere and left Menzo Berenzon behind.
This book is over, but the story continues. Keep listening after the credits to hear the beginning of Exile, Dark Elf Trilogy, Book 2. Book 2 in the Legend of Drizzt series free.
This has been an Audible Frontiers production of Homeland, written by R.A. Salvatore, narrated by Victor Bavine. Producer Mike Jarzik. Copyright 1990 by TSR Inc. Copyright 2004 by Wizards of the Coast Inc. Production copyright 2013 by Audible Inc.
And now a free preview of Exile, Dark Elf Trilogy Book 2. Book 2 in the Legend of Drizzt series.
Prelude. The monster lumbered along the quiet corridors of the Underdark, its 8 scaly legs occasionally scuffing the stone. It did not recoil at its own echoing sounds, fearing the revealing noise. Nor did it scurry for cover, expecting the rush of another predator. For even in the dangers of the Underdark, this creature knew only security, confident of its ability to defeat any foe. Its breath reeked of deadly poison. The hard edges of its claws dug deep gouges into solid stone, and the rows of spear-like teeth that lined its wicked maw could tear through the thickest of hides. But worst of all was the monster's gaze, the gaze of a basilisk, which could transmutate into solid stone any living thing it fell upon. This creature, huge and terrible, was among the greatest of its kind. It did not know fear. The hunter watched the basilisk pass, as he had watched it earlier that same day. The eight-legged monster was the intruder here, coming into the hunter's domain. He had witnessed the basilisk kill several of his rothae, the small cattle-like creatures that enhanced his table, with its poison breath, and the rest of the herd had fled blindly down the endless tunnels, perhaps never to return. The hunter was angry. He watched now as the monster trudged down the narrow passageway, just the route the hunter had suspected it would take. He slid his weapons from their sheaths, gaining confidence, as always, as soon as he felt their fine balance. The hunter had owned them since his childhood, and even after nearly 3 decades of almost constant use, they bore only the slightest hints of wear. Now they would be tested again. The hunter replaced his weapons and waited for the sound that would spur him to motion. A throaty growl stopped the basilisk in its tracks. The monster peered ahead curiously, though its poor eyes could distinguish little beyond a few feet. Again came the growl, and the basilisk hunched down, waiting for the challenger, its next victim, to spring out and die. Far behind, the hunter came out of his cubby, running impossibly fast along the tiny cracks and spurs in the corridor walls. In his magical cloak, his powafwi, he was invisible against the stone, and with his agile and practiced movements, he made not a sound. He came impossibly silent, impossibly fast. The growl issued again from ahead of the basilisk, but had not come any closer. The impatient monster shuffled forward, anxious to get on with the killing. When the basilisk crossed under a low archway, an impenetrable globe of absolute darkness enveloped its head, and the monster stopped suddenly and took a step back, as the hunter knew it would. The hunter was upon it then. He leaped from the passage wall, executing 3 separate actions before he ever reached his mark. First, he cast a simple spell, which lined the basilisk's head in glowing blue and purple flames. Next, he pulled his hood down over his face, for he did not need his eyes in battle, and against a basilisk, a stray gaze could only bring him doom. Then, drawing his deadly scimitars, he landed on the monster's back and ran up its scales to get to its head. The basilisk reacted as soon as the dancing flames outlined its head. They did not burn, but their outline made the monster an easy target. The basilisk spun back, but before its head had turned halfway, the first scimitar had dived into one of its eyes. The creature reared and thrashed, trying to get at the hunter. It breathed its noxious fumes and whipped its head about. The hunter was the faster. He kept behind the maw, out of death's way. His second scimitar found the basilisk's other eye, then the hunter unleashed his fury. The basilisk was the intruder. It had killed his rothae. Blow after savage blow bashed into the monster's armored head, flecked off scales, and dived for the flesh beneath. The basilisk understood its peril, but still believed that it would win. It had always won. If it could only get its poisonous breath in line with the furious hunter. The second foe, the growling feline foe, was upon the basilisk then, having sprung toward the flame-lined maw without fear. The great cat latched on and took no notice of the poisonous fumes, for it was a magical beast, impervious to such attacks. Panther claws dug deep lines into the basilisk's gums, letting the monster drink of its own blood. Behind the huge head, the hunter struck again and again, 100 times and more. Savagely, viciously, the scimitars slammed through the scaly armor, through the flesh, and through the skull, battering the basilisk down into the blackness of death. Long after the monster lay still, the pounding of the bloodied scimitars slowed. The hunter removed his hood and inspected the broken pile of gore at his feet and the hot stains of blood on his blades. He raised the dripping scimitars into the air and proclaimed his victory with a scream of primal exultation. He was the hunter, and this was his home. When he had thrown all of his rage out in that scream, though, the hunter looked upon his companion and was ashamed. The panther's saucer eyes judged him, even if the panther did not. The cat was the hunter's only link to the past, to the civilized existence the hunter once had known. "Come, Guinevere," he whispered, as he slid the scimitars back into their sheaths. He reveled in the sound of the words as he spoke them. It was the only voice he had heard for a decade, but every time he spoke now, the words seemed more foreign and came to him with difficulty. Would he lose that ability too, as he had lost every other aspect of his former existence? This the hunter feared greatly, for without his voice he could not summon the panther. He then truly would be alone. Down the quiet corridors of the Underdark went the hunter and his cat, making not a sound, disturbing no rubble. Together, they had come to know the dangers of this hushed world. Together they had learned to survive. Despite the victory, though, the hunter wore no smile this day. He feared no foes, but was no longer certain whether his courage came from confidence or from apathy about living. Perhaps survival was not enough. Part 1. The Hunter. I remember vividly the day I walked away from the city of my birth, the city of my people. All the Underdark lay before me, a life of adventure and excitement, with possibilities that lifted my heart. More than that, though, I left Menzo Berenzon with the belief that I could now live my life in accordance with my principles. I had Guinevere at my side and my scimitars belted on my hips. My future was my own to determine. But that drow, the young Drizdo Urden who walked out of Menzo Berenzon on that fated day, barely into my fourth decade of life, could not begin to understand the truth of time, of how its passage seemed to slow when the moments were not shared with others. In my youthful exuberance, I looked forward to several centuries of life. How do you measure centuries when a single hour seems a day and a single day seems a year? Beyond the cities of the Underdark, there is food for those who know how to find it and safety for those who know how to hide. More than anything else, though, beyond the teeming cities of the Underdark, there is solitude. As I became a creature of the empty tunnels, survival became easier and more difficult all at once. I gained in the physical skills and experience necessary to live on. I could defeat almost anything that wandered into my chosen domain, and those few monsters that I could not defeat, I could surely flee or hide from. It did not take me long, however, to discover one nemesis that I could neither defeat nor flee. It followed me wherever I went. Indeed, the farther I ran, the more it closed in around me. My enemy was solitude, the interminable, incessant silence of hushed corridors. Looking back on it these many years later, I find myself amazed and appalled at the changes I endured under such an existence. The very identity of every reasoning being is defined by the language, the communication between that being and others around it. Without that link, I was lost. When I left Menzo Berenzon, I determined that my life would be based on principles, my strength adhering to unbending beliefs. Yet after only a few months alone in the Underdark, the only purpose for my survival was my survival. I had become a creature of instinct, calculating and cunning, but not thinking, not using my mind for anything more than directing the newest kill. Guinevere saved me, I believe. The same companion that had pulled me from certain death in the clutches of monsters unnumbered rescued me from a death of emptiness, less dramatic perhaps, but no less fatal. I found myself living for those moments when the cat could walk by my side, when I had another living creature to hear my words, strained though they had become. In addition to every other value, Guinevere became my time clock, for I knew that the cat could come forth from the astral plane for a half day every other day. Only after my ordeal had ended did I realize how critical that one quarter of my time actually was. Without Guinevere, I would not have found the resolve to continue. I would never have maintained the strength to survive. Even when Guinevere stood beside me, I found myself growing more and more ambivalent toward the fighting. I was secretly hoping that some denizen of the Underdark would prove stronger than I. Could the pain of tooth or talon be greater than the emptiness and the silence? I think not. Drizzt Do'Urden. 1. Anniversary Present. Matron Malice Do'Urden shifted uneasily on the stone throne in the small and darkened anteroom to the great chapel of House Do'Urden. To the Dark Elves, who measured time's passage in decades, this was a day to be marked in the annals of Malice's house, the 10th anniversary of the ongoing covert conflict between the Do'Urden family and House Hunnett. Matron Malice, never one to miss a celebration, had a special present prepared for her enemies. Breeza Do'Urden, Malice's eldest daughter, a large and powerful drow female, paced about the anteroom anxiously, a not uncommon sight. "It should be finished by now," she grumbled as she kicked a small three-legged stool. It skidded and tumbled, chipping away a piece of mushroom-stem seat. "Patience, my daughter," Malice replied, somewhat recriminatory, though she shared Breeza's sentiments. "Jarlaxle is a careful one." Breeza turned away at the mention of the outrageous mercenary and moved to the room's ornately carved stone doors. Malice did not miss the significance of her daughter's actions. "You do not approve of Jarlaxle and his band," the matron mother stated flatly. "They are houseless rogues," Breeza spat in response, still not turning to face her mother. "There is no place in Menzo Berenzon for houseless rogues. They disrupt the natural order of our society, and they are males. They serve us well," Malice reminded her. Breeza wanted to argue about the extreme cost of hiring the mercenary band, but she wisely held her tongue. She and Malice had been at odds almost continually since the start of the Do'Urden-Hunnett War. "Without Bregan de Earth, we could not take action against our enemies," Malice continued. "Using the mercenaries, the houseless rogues, as you have named them, allows us to wage war without implicating our house as the perpetrator." "Then why not be done with it?" Breeza demanded, spinning back toward the throne. "We kill a few of Hunnett's soldiers, they kill a few of ours, and all the while both houses continue to recruit replacements. It will not end. The only winners in the conflict are the mercenaries of Bregan de Earth, and whatever band matron Sinefe Hunnett has hired, feeding off the coffers of both houses." "Watch your tone, my daughter," Malice growled as an angry reminder. "You are addressing a matron mother." Breeza turned away again. "We should have attacked House Hunnett immediately, on the night Zaknafane was sacrificed," she dared to grumble. "You forget the actions of your youngest brother on that night," Malice replied evenly.
But the matron mother was wrong.
If she lived 1,000 more years, Breeza would not forget Drizzt's actions on the night he had forsaken his family. Trained by Zacnaphane, Malus's favorite lover and reputedly the finest weapon master in all of Menzo Berenzon, Drizzt had achieved a level of fighting ability far beyond the drow norm. But Zack had also given Drizzt the troublesome and blasphemous attitudes that Lolth, the spider queen deity of the Dark Elves, would not tolerate. Finally, Drizzt's sacrilegious ways had invoked Lolth's wrath, and the spider queen in turn had demanded his death. Matron Malus, impressed by Drizzt's potential as a warrior, had acted boldly on Drizzt's behalf and had given Zacnaphane's heart to Lolth to compensate for Drizzt's sins. She forgave Drizzt in the hope that without Zacnaphane's influences he would amend his ways and replace the deposed weapon master. In return, though, the ungrateful Drizzt had betrayed them all, had run off into the Underdark, an act that not only had robbed House de Werden of its only potential remaining weapon master, but also had placed Matron Malus and the rest of the de Werden family out of Lolth's favor. In the disastrous end of all their efforts, House de Werden had lost its premier weapon master, the favor of Lolth, and its would-be weapon master. It had not been a good day. Luckily, House Hunnett had suffered similar woes on that same day, losing both its wizards in a botched attempt to assassinate Drizzt. With both houses weakened and in Lolth's disfavor, the expected war had been turned into a calculated series of covert raids. Breeza would never forget. A knock on the anteroom door startled Breeza and her mother from their private memories of that fateful time. The door swung open, and Deenan, the elder boy of the house, walked in.
"Greetings, Matron Mother,"
he said in an appropriate manner and dipping into a low bow. Deenan wanted his news to be a surprise, but the grin that found its way onto his face revealed everything.
"Jarlaxle has returned," Malus snarled in glee.
Deenan turned toward the open door, and the mercenary, waiting patiently in the corridor, strode in. Breeza, ever amazed at the rogue's unusual mannerisms, shook her head as Jarlaxle walked past her. Nearly every dark elf in Menzo Berenzon dressed in a quiet and practical manner, in robes adorned with the symbols of the Spider Queen, or in supple chain-link armor under the folds of a magical and camouflaging Powafwi cloak. Jarlaxle, arrogant and brash, followed few of the customs of Menzo Berenzon's inhabitants. He was most certainly not the norm of drow society, and he flaunted the differences openly, brazenly. He wore not a cloak, nor a robe, but a shimmering cape that showed every color of the spectrum, both in the glow of light and in the infrared spectrum of heat-sensing eyes. The cape's magic could only be guessed, but those closest to the mercenary leader indicated that it was very valuable indeed. Jarlaxle's vest was sleeveless and cut so high that his slender and tightly muscled stomach was open for all to view. He kept a patch over one eye, though careful observers would understand it as ornamental, for Jarlaxle often shifted it from one eye to the other. "My dear Breeza," Jarlaxle said over his shoulder, noting the High Priestess's disdainful interest in his appearance. He spun about and bowed low, sweeping off the wide-brimmed hat. Another oddity, and even more so since the hat was overly plumed in the monstrous feathers of a diatrima, a gigantic underdark bird, as he stooped. Breeza huffed and turned away at the sight of the mercenary's dipping head. Drow elves wore their thick white hair as a mantle of their station, each cut designed to reveal rank and house affiliation. Jarlaxle the Rogue wore no hair at all, and from Breeza's angle, his clean-shaven head appeared as a ball of pressed onyx. Jarlaxle laughed quietly at the continuing disapproval of the eldest Doerden daughter and turned back toward Matron Malus, his ample jewelry tinkling and his hard and shiny boots clumping with every step. Breeza took note of this as well, for she knew that those boots and that jewelry only seemed to make noise when Jarlaxle wished them to do so.
"Is it done?"
Matron Malus asked, before the mercenary could even begin to offer a proper greeting.
"My dear Matron Malus," Jarlaxle replied with a pained sigh, knowing that he could get away with the informalities in light of his grand news. "Did you doubt me? Surely I am wounded to my heart." Malus leaped from her throne, her fist clenched in victory. Dupree Honnête is dead, she proclaimed, the first noble victim of the war. You forget Massage Honnête, remarked Breeza, slain by Drizzt 10 years ago. And Zaknafane Doerden, Breeza had to add, against her better judgment, killed by your own hand. Zaknafane was not noble by birth, Malice sneered at her impertinent daughter. Breeza's words stung Malice nonetheless. Malice had decided to sacrifice Zaknafane in Drizzt's stead against Breeza's recommendations. Jarlaxle cleared his throat to deflect the growing tension. The mercenary knew that he had to finish his business and be out of House Doerden as quickly as possible. Already he knew, though the Doerdens did not, that the appointed hour drew near. There is the matter of my payment, he reminded Malice. Dinan will see to it, Malice replied with a wave of her hand, not turning her eyes from her daughter's pernicious stare. I will take my leave, Jarlaxle said, nodding to the elder boy. Before the mercenary had taken his first step toward the door, Vierna, Malice's second daughter, burst into the room, her face glowing brightly in the infrared spectrum, heated with obvious excitement. Damn, Jarlaxle whispered under his breath. What is it? Matron Malice demanded. House Honnête, Vierna cried. Soldiers in the compound, we are under attack. Out in the courtyard, beyond the cavern complex, nearly 500 soldiers of House Honnête, fully 100 more than the house reportedly possessed, followed the blast of a lightning bolt through House Doerden's adamantite gates. The 350 soldiers of the Doerden household swarmed out of the shaped stalagmite mounds that served as their quarters to meet the attack. Outnumbered but trained by Zaknafane, the Doerden troops formed into proper defensive positions, shielding their wizards and clerics so that they might cast their spells. An entire contingent of Honnête soldiers, empowered with enchantments of flying, swooped down the cavern wall that housed the royal chambers of House Doerden. Tiny handheld crossbows clicked and thinned the ranks of the aerial force with deadly poison-tipped darts. The aerial invaders' surprise had been achieved, though, and the Doerden troops were quickly put into a precarious position. Honnête has not the favor of Lolth, Malice screamed. It would not dare to openly attack. She flinched at the refuting, thunderous sounds of another, and then still another bolt of lightning. Oh? Breeza snapped. Malice cast her daughter a threatening glare, but didn't have time to continue the argument. The normal method of attack by a drow house would involve the rush of soldiers combined with a mental barrage by the house's highest-ranking clerics. Malice, though, felt no mental attack, which told her beyond any doubt that it was indeed House Honnête that had come to her gates. The clerics of Honnête, out of the Spider Queen's favor, apparently could not use their Lolth-given powers to launch the mental assault. If they had, Malice and her daughters, also out of the Spider Queen's favor, could not have hoped to counter. Why would they dare to attack? Malice wondered aloud. Breeza understood her mother's reasoning. They are bold indeed, she said, to hope that their soldiers alone can eliminate every member of our house. Everyone in the room, every drow in Menzo Baranzon, understood the brutal, absolute punishments exacted upon any house that failed to eradicate another house. Such attacks were not frowned upon, but getting caught at the deed most certainly was. Risen, the present patron of House Doerden, came into the anteroom then, his face grim. "We are outnumbered and outpositioned," he said. "Our defeat will be swift, I fear." Malice would not accept the news. She struck Risen with a blow that knocked the patron halfway across the floor. Then she spun on Jarlaxle. "You must summon your band," Malice cried at the mercenary. "Quickly!" "Matron," Jarlaxle stuttered, obviously at a loss. "Bregan d'Aerth is a secretive group. We do not engage in open warfare. To do so could invoke the wrath of the ruling council." "I will pay you whatever you desire," the desperate matron mother promised. "But the cost, whatever you desire," Malice snarled again. "Such action," Jarlaxle began. Again, Malice did not let him finish his argument. "Save my house, mercenary," she growled. "Your profits will be great, but I warn you, the cost of your failure will be far greater."
Jarlaxle did not appreciate being threatened, especially by a lame matron mother whose entire world was fast crumbling around her. But in the mercenary's ears, the sweet ring of the word prophets outweighed the threat 1,000 times over. After 10 straight years of exorbitant rewards in the Dowerden-Hunnet conflict, Jarlaxle did not doubt Malice's willingness or ability to pay as promised, nor did he doubt that this deal would prove even more lucrative than the agreement he had struck with Matron Sinefe Hunnet earlier that same 10-day. "As you wish," he said to Matron Malice with a bow and a sweep of his garish hat. "I will see what I can do." A wink at Deenan set the elder boy on his heels as he exited the room. When the two got out on the balcony overlooking the Dowerden compound, they saw that the situation was even more desperate than Risen had described. The soldiers of House Dowerden, though still alive, were trapped in and around one of the huge stalagmite mounds anchoring the front gate. One of Hunnet's flying soldiers dropped onto the balcony at the sight of a Dowerden noble, but Deenan dispatched the intruder with a single, blurring attack routine. "Well done," Jarlaxle commented, giving Deenan an approving nod. He moved to pat the elder boy Dowerden on the shoulder, but Deenan slipped out of reach.
"We have other business," he pointedly reminded Jarlaxle. "Call your troops in quickly, else I fear that House Hunnet will win the day."
"Be at ease, my friend Deenan," Jarlaxle laughed. He pulled a small whistle from around his neck and blew into it. Deenan heard not a sound, for the instrument was magically tuned exclusively for the ears of members of Bregan de Earth. The elder boy Dowerden watched in amazement as Jarlaxle calmly puffed out a specific cadence. Then he watched in even greater amazement as more than 100 of House Hunnet's soldiers turned against their comrades. Bregan de Earth owed allegiance only to Bregan de Earth.
"They could not attack us," Malice said stubbornly, pacing about the chamber. "The Spider Queen would not aid them in their venture."
"They are winning without the Spider Queen's aid," Risen reminded her, prudently ducking into the room's farthest corner, even as he spoke the unwanted words.
"You said that they would never attack," Breeza growled at her mother, "even as you explained why we could not dare to attack them."
Breeza remembered that conversation vividly, for it was she who had suggested the open attack on House Hunnet. Malice had scolded her harshly and publicly, and now Breeza meant to return the humiliation. Her voice dripped of angry sarcasm as she aimed each word at her mother.
"Could it be that Matron Malice Dowerden has erred?"
Malice's reply came in the form of a glare that wavered somewhere between rage and terror. Breeza returned the threatening look without ambiguity, and suddenly the matron mother of House Dowerden did not feel so very invincible and sure of her actions. She started forward nervously a moment later when Maya, the youngest of the Dowerden daughters, entered the room.
"They have breached the house,"
Breeza cried, assuming the worst. She grabbed at her snake-headed whip.
"And we have not even begun our preparations for defense."
"No," Maya quickly corrected. "No enemies have crossed the balcony. The battle has turned against House Hunnet."
"As I knew it would,"
Malice observed, pulling herself straight and speaking pointedly at Breeza.
"Foolish is the house that moves without the favor of Lolth."
Despite her proclamation, though, Malice guessed that more than the judgment of the Spider Queen had come into play out in the courtyard. Her reasoning led her inescapably to Jarlaxle and his untrustworthy band of rogues.
We hope you enjoyed this free preview of Exile, Dark Elf Trilogy, Book 2, Book 2 in the Legend of Drizzt series. To keep the story going, get the complete book today.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.